Hi, folks. Thurb here. Just doing a little add-on to the podcast. This week, we didn't really have a traditional start. We just started talking about stuff and realized, oh, yeah, we should probably do a proper intro. So there's the reason for that. Otherwise, enjoy this week's episode of the Scotchcast with myself, Shinboy, and self-confessed cynic.
Some people have Drakes that are named Jaunty Drake.
Oh, that's the best.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Best is Revenant on his Ranger has a bear named Bear Stegalkin. Like, that's a bad pun.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Let's do this. You're hosting, right? Because you're the host master.
Cynic. Guess what? Mm-hmm. Best Buys, not the one near me, unfortunately, had one day sales today on Vitas for $99.
I saw that. That's insane. Did you buy one? You should have bought
one. No, my local Best Buy was not participating in said sale.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, I would have.
All right.
Oh, man. That's such a good sale.
Is everybody ready?
Yep.
We have notes or anything? Hold on. Question. Am I going to be uploading this, though?
In terms of doing the notes,
actual
I'm not sure.
Posting. Okay, no, the only reason I ask is then I'll actually get a notepad document thing open that if I say or someone else says it'll be in the show notes, I actually jot it down, so it will be in the show notes.
That's annoying having to listen to the show again and be like, oh, okay, this we talked about this.
Yeah, see, I usually have a pen and paper next to
me. That's why I asked if you could upload, because I would have done it Thursday night when I was in class not paying attention, because that's when I did the thread for the previous show, but I couldn't sit there and listen to the other one to get the plugs out, so... Yesterday, my internet was all kinds of broken, so I had to overnight a new router.
I know you did an overnight on it.
Yeah, I ordered it yesterday. I got here at like 10 a.m. this morning. It was great.
Nice.
Pretty great. Ugh, we don't have such things here. I have to go to a shop to get that kind
of
speed.
You can overnight poison the spiders. That's about it.
Yeah.
From Amazon.
You know, my work, it's just like our warehouse is filled with redbacks. It's fucked up. I'm not even lying. I'm not joking.
Well, I'm never going to your nation.
It's really fucked up. I'd never seen a redback in my life until I went to like this place at work and then just filled with them.
That's the router I got, by the way.
And they're legit dangerous. They're they're actually one of the most dangerous things in Australia. That's fucked up.
Have you ever seen a spider large enough to have a health bar? That's the real question.
I would argue, there's one in Dark Souls, right? That's got a health bar.
What's the real life equivalent of having a health bar? Just like.
I'm just saying, like, this thing
big enough to see the look in its eyes. Okay,
big enough that it could wrap its like wrap around your face, alien style.
Oh, I didn't know. No, not quite. I've seen snakes up easily.
Okay, just on the quick subject of that. You know, I occasionally go to a theater down the street from where I live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're playing Alien, like 1979.
We don't have that here. At least not like frequently.
I don't have a lot of theaters playing retro movies around me.
I wish we did.
We'll go watch Alien in a theater. Alien's fantastic.
Yeah. And theaters are great, especially when there's a group of people who care about a movie. You'd pretty much be the only thing there, hopefully.
It's this real, like, you know, this almost seems like a mom and pop style theater. But the main reason why I'm able to like recruit people to go see it is like, hey, if we go on Tuesday, it's buy one get one free. So instead of $4, it's $2
That's
per person.
Good. Whoa, $4?
Yeah, it's normally $4.
What? What kind of crazy ass is that? Holy shit!
It's Alien from 1979.
As in the best movie in that franchise.
Oh, I agree on the quality of the movie. It's just. It's hard-pressed to get people to pay money for one from that long ago.
Man, I am paying $40 for a video game from the early 2000s here in a couple months. So
what are you doing? Why are you...
The 10-10-2 HD pack.
Oh, yeah, dude, I'm buying the shit out of that. That's going to be awesome.
Yo, I'm so upset that Japan gets the good cover by default, and you have to buy the collector's edition in the US to get the not gay cover.
There's different covers? What covers are there? Final Fantasy.
The Japanese cover is the white with just the logo. Then the US cover is Tidus and Yuna being all stupid.
Oh, that's so lame.
That's the US cover.
Oh, and Tidus is at like this weird effeminate face in that. That's weird.
That's why I called it gay.
Oh.
I normally don't throw that term around like that, but it fits.
Yeah, the white cover is clearly where it's at. Because that's the original cover, like on the original game. That's much
it. Oh, no, it's not.
It's my copy.
It's just the logo.
The Euro
maybe
version.
In Power Regions, but the cover in the US was Tidus standing like in shallow water with that bluish sword.
Oh, okay. That was like a magazine cover art for that. Oh, I see it.
Yeah, that was the original US cover.
Right.
Which actually isn't a bad cover.
Yeah, and it makes and like it has many like reflections upon what happens in that game, which I like.
I like the logo.
All this going to stay in the podcast because it may as well.
As much as I dislike 12, I think the 12 cover is badass. For
I am ready to start whenever you guys are.
Hold on.
Just start, and we'll just continue this conversation.
Badass cover for a video game.
Do the intro whenever you feel like it.
Hello and welcome to the Scotchcast. Apparently I'm hosting now.
Okay, who are you?
I am Shinboy 630 most of the time.
Okay.
Who are you?
My name is Connor Kirby, also known as Thurbleton.
And who's that other voice that was here not too long ago?
Dude who's looking at Yuna. And it kind of weirded out, because Yuna never really used to be sexy. At least in my
career. Okay. I said, you didn't play 10-2.
Yeah, I didn't play 10-2. I only played Planet 10-1. Now seeing a bunch of pictures in Yuna, with Yuna in like short shorts, it's just weird. It's just weird. I don't know.
It's like short shorts with that weird skirt in the back.
Yeah. The belt like is on her ass. I don't know how I feel about any of that. Like Garnet Lee's like thing about Final Fantasy 10-2 being the best one is he's just a crazy person. I can't.
I don't know. I've never played 10-2, but I know some people really are into that game.
Yeah, and having played something else very similar. Just to answer this question, I'm so confessed cynic. Back with a vengeance.
Thank you.
Yeah. As aforementioned, we are gathered here, this menagerie of cavalcade of stars, if you will, for Scotchcast for the week of the 1st of February, 2014, Year of Our Lord. So, what are we going to talk about? Do we have video games?
We're going to talk about video games. We're going to talk about what we're doing. I don't know. Like I'm capable of doing the
form. You haven't been here for a while. What have you been doing in the interim?
Oh, God. Okay. I'll just talk about the games I've been playing, because the stuff I've been doing has just been like working, and working sucks. And
Indeed.
I don't want to talk about work. I don't want to talk about work. So I have been playing a bunch of video games, and I'll go in reverse chronological order. I'll just start with this one because I feel like it, because we're just talking about Final Fantasy. Have you had a chance of playing the Final Fantasy 13-3 demo yet?
Or have you played a bit of it? I didn't finish it.
That is the Lightning Returns, right?
Yes.
Lightning Returns, Final Fantasy 13. I don't even know the title of that anymore. I think it's just Final Fantasy 13. Lightning Returns.
I think it's the other way. I think it's Lightning Returns, Final Fantasy 13.
Oh, God. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so you...
Square doesn't know how to name games.
So it's only 2 gigs, right? I was like, what? No, yeah, that seems pretty small for... Especially for, like, a Final Fantasy demo. And I downloaded it. And it's kind of interesting because you boot that game, right? And for the first, like, 3 minutes... It launches into a CG, like, CG cinematic, right? Mm-hmm. It's just... pure cinematic, but the weird thing is, it's just like music playing and like makers, like the opening credits play like over the CG cinematic, and you're seeing like the characters are clearly talking, but the CG is like there's no voice audio. It's just the music and the credits, and it goes to that for like 3 minutes, over which time it made me realize that, especially without them talking, I had no goddamn clue what the fuck was going on.
Oh, did you play 13
too? Of the intro. Yeah, and I played 13.1 and 13.2 like three. Oh my god! Like I played 13.2 like 6 months ago or something. Like really recently, and that game ends in a very specific way. That's quite memorable. But when this opens, it just makes zero goddamn sense. It starts with like lightning on a clock tower, and then like there's like lightning flashing all around her, and she's making like motions with her mouth as she's clearly speaking, but you can't hear any of it. Then she's like, then snow is like for some reason like all dark and brooding and overseeing like, this dance, and then lightning sucks the souls out of some dudes, and that makes no sense because it looks really fucking evil what she does, and then they fight for some reason. And I'm cheering for Snow because he's clearly the more interesting character of the two, and then yeah, just this shit happens. Some chick who looks like Sarah, like exactly like Sarah, walks up.
She's no like one of the main characters in that game. She's like the main antagonist, at least initially.
Yeah, I think so. Like that's the impression I got from that part.
I'm pretty sure that's what they said in an interview at some point.
She broke Lightning's sword, and that seems bad. And all her things are red, so that probably means she's evil, right?
Video game logic.
It was so it turns out that that's just like the. Like the you don't do anything when opening this demo thing. So usually, like when you open a video game, right, they have that pre-video game trailer that you hit start over and don't even notice because you skip past it so quickly. That was what that was. So that all ends. Then it just gets to the starting screen of start demo settings and whatever the fuck. And turns out that that is like the first 3 minutes of the demo, and they actually have the voiceover when you start the demo. So that made way more sense. Like things started actually clicking because you start putting together what you heard in interviews and stuff.
Let's not get crazy here. It didn't make a whole lot of sense. This is still Final Fantasy 13 we're discussing.
All right, I had the benefit of having seen it just the second, like seconds, rewatching it. So I got to see it a second time. Back to back, so I kind of was able to at least tell what the fuck was going on. But no, you're totally right. Like, there's like, it's not, it doesn't look like the same world. And like, one of my major criticisms of Final Fantasy 13 was like their use of jargon. So there was like Blissey and the Falcy,
I agree,
all that bullshit. But so they don't have the same, like, weird words to them, but there's still a lot of jargon in this one. So she's like, Lightning's like the savior, and there's like this chaos stuff that does things, assumedly. And then like Snow is like this overseer or something, and all these like are inner like capitalized words which clearly are supposed to have some form of meaning, but have none whatsoever in the context of the demo, at least. And then, yeah, it just goes on to extended fighting sequences, 5 minutes of gameplay, and then the demo ends. That was kind of my experience with it.
I started up. Something came up where I couldn't finish it, and there's no real saves in it because it's pretty short, actually.
Yeah.
I just sort of did, like, the basic tutorials, fought one or two things, and I guess you just sort of leave that room and there's a boss?
Yes. That's as far as I know. Like, yeah, you leave the room, there's a boss, there's a couple more tutorials doing the boss, and then it ends. That's as far as I... So most, like, that 2 gig download was that CG trailer.
Yeah, okay, so then, speaking of demos from Square, have you played Bravely Default at all, seeing as it's been out in PAL regions for a while?
I have a US 3DS, which is a massive mistake. I was close to getting both, but just stick with one, considering how, like, I'm not too impressed with the 3DS as a piece of hardware, so I didn't buy both. I have to wait with you jackasses until that comes out.
You played the demo?
No, is that already out here?
Been out since the beginning of January.
I might play the demo. I've heard the demo is like exclusive, not in the game
it's
stuff.
It's a side story, so it's not a vertical slice.
Hmm.
And I've put about 7 hours into it.
Jeez.
So it's basically, there's like a city in the middle of a big desert. It's like an oasis city, right? And there are three dungeons, one to the east, one to the west, and one to the south. And you pretty much get a quest to go get stuff from that dungeon, kill that dungeon's boss. You do that for each of them. Then there's two more bosses after that. But depending on what you do, you get play bonuses, which are just like basic items like potions and stuff that will carry over to the main game.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a little meta mechanic in the game where you're trying to rebuild this town. And depending on what you have built in the town, determines what extra items and gear you can buy from like the save dude. And through street passing, you get more people in the town to help build the buildings faster. So, you know, one person will take 10 hours, which it counts if your game's suspended and your 3DS is closed.
Okay.
But, you know, two dudes will take 5 hours and three dudes will take 3 1/3 hours or whatever. And you can carry up to 20 people from the demo to the main game.
Oh, okay. So there is actually some linking there. Yeah. I was like, why would you do any of this? All right, sure. Wait, so
you can also exploit it to get 20 dudes immediately, but
of course. So Bravely Default is the game that those dudes are putting out as like a callback to FF9 and supposedly
they are relaunching Final Fantasy without saying it.
Yeah. So who are they? Like, are they ex-Square guys? Like, what's
being published by Square?
Is it being published? Oh,
it's
really?
The 3D Game Heroes people.
No way.
Yep, pretty sure.
That's crazy because that thing's been getting like rave reviews around the place because supposedly really really fucking good.
Yeah, Silicon Studio, the Bravely Default guys did 3D Game Heroes as well.
That's. Wait, where are they? Where are they?
They're Japanese.
Are they U.S. crew? Okay. Okay. That's an interesting name for a Japanese company. I don't know. But no, you're right. Like, it sounds really cool. Like, I kind of want to sit here and ruminate for a second, Shinboy, if you want to go with me along this spiritual journey.
Sure. What do you want to know?
I'll go too.
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure. Like, what your experience is with JRPGs, Doubleton?
Oh, it's so many experiences. Let me see JRPGs.
So Shinboy, like, what's the battle system of Bravely Default? Is it still called Flying Fairy, or is it called?
No, the version that the US is getting, which comes back to my earlier point that Square doesn't know how to name games, is called Bravely Default for the sequel.
Oh, okay.
It's called that is because they added a whole bunch of stuff. It's almost like an international version like they would do for a lot of the Final Fantasies. But
right.
It's supposed to prepare you for the sequel, Bravely Second. It's supposed to be coming out, at least in Japan, at some point this year.
Bravely Second.
Yep.
That's great. I like it. I like how they
you weren't here for our Game of the Year stuff when I was trying when we were doing the big spreadsheet.
No.
And I put in Kingdom Hearts 1.5 HD Remix and wanted to make sure it was stylized correctly. So in Remix, the only lowercase letter is the E.
Of course.
And apparently the 1 is actually a Roman numeral 1, but the 5 is a normal like Arabic 5. Dern had a good laugh at that.
Back to my question though. What's the battle system of Bravely Default?
It's turn-based.
Turn-based? But
hold on.
Okay.
There is a brave and a default system where everyone in the battle starts out with 0 BP, which I think is brave points.
Okay.
And that is basically your turns, meaning that you can default, as in take a defensive stance and not do anything for that turn. And the next turn, you will then have 1 BP, so you can go twice. And that works its way into a whole risk-reward thing. Meaning that...
Are you guarding or do you just take normal damage?
You take slightly less than normal damage. You do gain some defensive buff from it.
Okay.
The thing is, you can brave up to -3, I think. So you can go like 3 turns at once if you do it right from the beginning. But then you can't do anything again until you get back to 0. It counts up at the end of each turn.
What?
Meaning, okay, say I only have one dude, right?
Okay, yeah.
I can brave twice, so I get 3 moves. But for the next 2 turns...
Let's go slower. So it's your turn. You brave once. Then the enemy moves, right? And they hit you.
No, I say I just do a normal move, and the enemy does a normal move. Then it's just a regular turn-based. I brave once. That means I can go twice. But the next turn, like, I'll go twice in a row, the enemy will go, and then I can't do anything for that turn. So the enemy would basically get to go twice.
So you lose. So if you brave, you lose the turn you brave on, right? And then, if you default, yes. You lose the turn you brave.
If you default, you default for that turn.
You default for that turn, yeah. And then, so the next turn, you have one brave essentially. So you can
you can either hold on to it, you know, not use it that turn, or you can use it that turn.
Okay, and then so the turn after that, are you then unable to move again?
No, because you'll still be at the base amount because you basically skipped a turn, okay. Then went twice, so it evened out.
Oh, okay. So, but if you, say, skipped a turn, then did one action instead of two, then you'd be at minus one still, right? Or
you'd be at, for some reason, this is what confused me initially. Instead of starting at one and going to zero, you start at zero and go to negative one.
Yeah, sure.
It's like a coder designed which one they would want to start with. You know, normally if you're counting something, say an 8-bit number, 8-bit integer, instead of going from 1 to 8, you would go from 0 to 7.
Yeah.
It's like a coder decided to do that.
Wait, so essentially what you're doing is you're saving up to get multiple turns in a row and then just blowing your load, essentially, on that.
And you can... It works its way into the job system because it is like a job system based MMO. So you can switch jobs on the fly out of combat and everything. And it has sort of like Guild Wars 1E cross class system.
Okay.
Where you have the active abilities of your job and one other at any time.
Ah, okay. Yep.
You can have the passives that you have unlocked because there are passives that just give you like, bonus defense for each round of the battle or something silly like that. Right. You can have those that you've unlocked from any job up to 4 points worth. So some will be worth one, some will be worth two.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
So a good example is if you're using, this is what I did. If you're using a ninja, which is like, you know, pretty self-explanatory, uses daggers and high evade and everything, you might want to level up a red mage. Because there's a red mage ability that whenever you evade, you gain one BP, so one turn. There's a ninja ability that you pretty much evade one physical attack, and that lasts on you until it is used.
Oh, man.
So it's not just one turn. You can just throw it on at the beginning of the battle, and you'll be fine pretty much permanently. Like, you're basically, unless the boss sort of braves a couple of times and hits you a few times, you're basically invincible.
Yeah. Man, that sounds... You do that. Ninjas, I'm not sure if you know this, but ninjas are usually rigged in TRPGs.
Guess what? I also had that with my white mage, so all of the heals. It was pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what... So that is a evolution of a very standard JRPG trope, right? So the battle system that seems very it's a spin on the norm, right? It's definitely rooted in something we've definitely seen before, right?
It's great.
How do you feel?
Oops, sorry. Go ahead. I was going to give another example.
Go ahead. You know what? Go ahead.
If you sort of default on your white mage until you need the healing. You can get one of those things where you can revive and then heal someone back up to full in the same turn.
Oh, yeah. That sounds so useful for white mage. Yeah.
Like, you know, using life and then being at like 2 health and you just need to go, oh, God, I hope they don't get hit again.
Right. Oh, yeah. Have you played any of the Shin Megami Tensei games? Not the Persona ones, just the normal Shin Megami Tensei ones? Okay. Because in those games, it's got something that's kind of the inverse where... If you hit an enemy for their weakness, in Persona, that means you knock them down and they're weakened, right? And you get a chance to go again. In this, you literally just get a straight up chance to go again, and you can use that for anything thereof. So essentially, you can go around an entire group and continually... I'm trying to think of why this is a different Persona. No, it's exactly the same as Persona, just like they indicate it differently. But you can just straight up like gain turns as many times as you want. By being offensive, this is kind of the inverse, where if you default as much as you can gain turns to exploit them later.
Do is, say a boss for the first time, I would have whoever had scan it while everyone else just defaulted until I knew what its weakness was.
Right.
And that way, once I knew its weakness, I could have, say it was weak to like lightning, my black mage would have a few turns saved up, and I could cast lightning a few times in one turn.
Yeah, that's cool. I legitimately really like that. That's really cool. And the enemies can default as well, I assume?
I know they can brave. I know the bosses brave a few times, and they'll hit you a whole bunch of times, things can go real south. I'm pretty sure they can default as well. Because look at the boss, it'll show you the boss's BP, same as the player's.
Oh, okay, so they can start at a different BP. Okay.
Everyone starts at zero, but the thing is, like, say he uses a few attacks, you can see how many turns you have left to do stuff before he can start attacking again.
Okay, interesting. But yeah, so how do you feel about that versus the Final Fantasy, the Lightning Returns Final Fantasy 13 combat system, which is really different.
Know if you can compare them.
I know. Like, how crazy is that, like, this revival of the Final Fantasy franchise, Brave the Default, is going, yelling at the top of its lungs, running in one direction, whilst Final Fantasy, like Final Fantasy Returns, is going absolutely the other direction with it. Do you want to explain, or should I explain how it works?
You played it a lot more than I did, so go ahead.
Okay, so how it works is you only have one character in your party, which is Lightning. That's it. That's the only one you've got. At some point, it's kind of weird because it raises questions like, then why do you need a battle screen and all that kind of stuff? But that aside, you're running around the world.
Let's not think about that for the time being. Let's just go.
Yeah. So you run out of the world. You still have the enemies on, like, just jumping around outside, like, say, your Tales games or your previous Final Fantasy 13 games. And then you run into them. Before you get to them, and stop me if you heard this before, i.e. any Atlas game, you have the chance to swing your sword and hit them before you start the battle. And if you hit them from behind, you get a bonus. And if you hit them from the front, you may still get a bonus. But if you don't hit them well, you get a negative. So, like, you start with 5% less HP, or they start with 10% less HP, and shit like that. That aside, you then go into the battle. So it's just Lightning, and how it works is, let's just call them stances. Like, there's costume changes is what they actually are, and they have their weird names for them. But essentially, you have stances.
No, it's no garment grid.
Yeah, it's... you know what? To me, the only thing that stands out about the garment grid is that it actually changes costume, and Lightning changes costumes, so maybe it'll be the same thing.
That's like the name of the garment. It's a really silly name.
So essentially in Final Fantasy 13 games, what you had before was your entire team can swap as an entire team to a different set of classes. So you pretty much just hit a button and then they all go to whatever your presets were. So you say you have a Sentinel, Medic, Sentinel in one team. For some reason, that's a terrible combo. But yeah, Sentinel, Medic, Sentinel in one team. You have another team, which is Assault, Ravager, Assault, which is actually a good combo. What you do is those three things are connected to your three party members. So one person would be Sentinel, one person would be Medic, one person would be Sentinel. Then the other one would be Assault, Ravager, Assault. And if you hit a button, all of them will change that second list. So everyone, the two Sentinels would become Assaults, and the Medic would become a Ravager in that case. In this case, you only have one character. So essentially what you're doing is doing the same thing, but since it's only one character, it's as if you're just changing a stance. You just go from one moveset to another moveset to another moveset. So in the demo, you have three to choose from at any given time in battle. And outside of battle, you can swap them between some of the other presets. So essentially, you have three stances to go in battle. And each stance has its own ATB gauge. And that's actually kind of important, because in Final Fantasy 13, how it works is your ATB gauge actually decides what you can do in a turn. So,
spell takes up a certain specified chunk of it.
Yeah, so Faraga will take like half of it, whereas like Thunder will take up a very small chunk of it, etc. So each of the three stances has its own distinct ATB gauge, and they still recharge whilst behind. So while you're not in that stance, so if you start in a Dragoon, right, and switch back to the Chosen, whatever the fuck her name was again, the Savior, then while you're in the Savior, Dragoon is still recharging. But it still recharges if you stay in it. So if you're staying in Savior and just spam the X button to do normal attacks, if you let off for a while, it'll still recharge. But the way to be good at the combat is to continue chain stances and use as much of the ATB gauge as you can per stance, then switch stance again. So it ends up being a constant combat system, just like to some extent Final Fantasy XIII, in that you're constantly changing stances, constantly using entirely different movesets, hopefully with the end goal of them being synergistic in some way. But the major differences is that I saw, at least for this, is that there's no way to heal yourself. You're just a very offensive character, which kind of makes sense because Lightning was never much of a healer. But it ends up being pretty much just a really, not really mashy, but a very action-y kind of combat system.
And in a way that felt weird.
Yeah, in a way that felt really weird. Like going from a turn, what felt something derivative from turn-based, which is what the 13 was, especially going and playing other games like Fire Emblem in the meanwhile, going to this didn't feel like a JRPG at all. It didn't, aside from the fact that you're running around a world and you're hitting enemies and entering a battle screen, it did not feel like a JRPG. In fact, if they removed the battle screen from it, it would feel like an action game. It's just straight up Bayonet-esque action game with a pretty cool stats and costume changing system. So like, what do you feel, Shinpo? How do you feel about the Japanese game, like RPG industry, if this is the two big releases in the next month, Bravely Default and Final Fantasy 13?
It shows that so old games different. Can still work or old style games can still work if they aren't terrible.
True. That's true. I also think that I like the fact that's so diverse. Like, I like
it. Yeah, because, like, 15 looks even crazier than that.
Yeah. That's
15 looks like a straight-up awesome. Action game.
You know what? I think looks like is a very distinct thing we must underline.
Not necessarily seeing as that's the Kingdom Hearts team.
Yeah, it could just be straight-up action.
Because that's basically an action game.
Yeah.
I was playing Re: Chain of Memories. That's a weird combat system. Cards. What? Kingdom Hearts Re: Chain of Memories. You know, the full 3D remake of the GBA game. What? It's part of the 1.5 HD remix package.
Okay. I had never heard of that in my entire life.
It's basically the direct follow-up to the first game before 2 came out. Okay. But basically, the way the combat works is it's a card combat game.
I love cards.
Each card has numbers. Well, it's like each card has numbers assigned to it. No, that's the value. And say you throw out like a 4, an enemy can break it with a 5 or higher. Stuff like that.
Okay.
Cards. But you know, everything's a card. Like, so you can have your cure interrupted if someone throws out a higher number.
That's kind of cool.
And the way it works is zeros interrupt anything but are interrupted by anything, which is interesting. It's an interesting little mechanic keeps zeros interesting in your deck.
Yeah. That sounds legitimately cool.
The way the abilities work is you can stack up to 3 cards.
Mm-hmm.
So like Ragnarok or something silly like that will be, okay, you have to stack 3 cards of the same type with the value between 25 and 30 or something like that. Or 25 to 27.
Okay. Like, so right. And you have to add to something in there if you stack them correctly. And then
say you have 3 attack cards of the same type, of the same keyblade, because they're technically different.
Right.
That will add up to, say, 16. That will be a different attack or skill than if they added up to, say, 22.
That's kind of cool.
You sort of have to structure your deck in a certain way.
Hmm.
The thing is, you can't just spam that, because when you do that, you have to watch which order you add the cards in.
Right.
Because say you want to make something that's 19, you might want to make it 199 instead of like 991, because the first card is always like permanently discarded for the rest of the fight.
Oh. Okay. If you make a Ragnarok, then it's permanently discarded, right?
Yeah, like say you throw something together that's like a 7, a 6, and a 5. I don't know what that is off the top of my head. But if you do the 7 first, the 7's gone until the end of the fight.
Yeah. If that makes a combo, the first one's gone.
Yeah. When you refresh your deck, it doesn't come back.
Whoa. Okay. All right. You know what? Let's see again. I just kind of wanted to point out that I really like the fact that this kind of shit is just so varied and crazy. And that's awesome. It's why I still like JRPGs.
is that, like, this is all happening in, like, a 3D space, like a Kingdom Hearts game. Which is perhaps the weirdest part.
That's kind of, that is kind of
so
weird.
You can still, like, jump around and all of that.
So they, so when you say they remade it, they actually properly remade it, because that GBA wouldn't be able to do...
No, 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 the GBA was more like, it was sort of like the old school beat-em-ups where it was 2D, but you could move up and down. You know
right.
what I'm talking about?
Okay, like, gotcha. Yeah, like the world ends with you and a couple of those, yeah.
Yeah. And then this is just like straight up, you enter a full like 3D cube with enemies in it. That's the same thing where the enemies are in like the overworld and you hit them and they take damage at the start.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how or why that has become the norm now, especially since Tails and Shin Megami Tensei have been doing it forever. But yeah, I guess it works. I'm kind of excited for the eventual lack of any form of battle screen, which is kind of why I really liked Final Fantasy XII. Like I really, really liked Final Fantasy XII. Like the plot was so-so, but in my opinion,
it was terrible. I looked at my save. Yeah. I didn't finish that game. I didn't realize I had put 22 hours into it.
Jeez. Yes. But yeah, I just love running around that world and not having to, like, yeah, did not have to go.
No, in this context, the battle screens work because the world is just a room.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a small room, and the way you create the rooms is actually with more cards. There are, like, world cards, which determines what the room is. So,
all right, sure.
Like, save spots are just a card that you use. And
okay. Same,
where in order to open a certain door, you will need a card of a certain value. So say you want to put a save point, like, well, shit, the highest save point I have is only a 5, and this door requires a 7. I guess I'm going to have to make a room with enemies in it.
Nice. Okay. That's good. Yeah, at some point we could just sit here recounting our memories of battle systems for literally forever because we played.
Speaking of battle systems,
I mean, we could talk about a battle system for a new turn-based strategy game.
We could.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
And I were on the same page there.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah. Do you want I'll intro on it or what?
You've played more of it than I, so go ahead.
Yeah, I've done 2 playthroughs of the Banner Saga, which we'll talk about hopefully for the last time.
Playthroughs?
Yeah.
What? Game was like 20 hours long or something.
No comment on different endings.
I just want to know if there are different endings. I don't care what they are or how different they are.
I'm going to say no, there are not different endings.
Okay.
It ends in a cliffhanger, so there couldn't really be. It has to be that.
Sure, yeah. You'll just, like, listeners will have to just play through it. I've been enjoying it. The second playthrough is mainly for the... Like, a lot of the game is both, there's half combat and half just decisions you make outside of combat that will determine whether or not which heroes join or leave your party, as well as, you know, who lives or who dies or, you know, who leaves the party, what have you, and how well you can manage your caravan. And so the second playthrough, I was like, I'm going to make all the right choices, and ended up having to make, for the most part, even harder choices than the first time.
What? I thought it'd be it's not the same the second time through?
Well, I mean the main plot is the same, but it's sort of like the Walking Dead story of like, okay, well, I was able to save this person from the event of him dying in this scenario, but the next scenario after that is even like a harder decision. I won't go into.
Oh, it's kind of like the butterfly effect where you've seen one version of the future by playing it through once.
Yeah.
So now you kind of have to.
Well, okay. Here's
like BioShock Infinite.
Modify it.
Here's a good example. There's this place. There's the original playthrough. I won't name names, but there's this the guy who I did not get along with. I kind of butted heads against his character, and there came a point in the story where I was just like, "How are you still in the caravan? I thought I killed you." Like not let you die. I thought I killed the guy, or like he put us in a position to be killed. So I was like, I don't want him hanging around. In the second playthrough, you get the option to just straight up tie him up.
Right.
And I was like, okay, let's do that. And then this other guy who, like, the next day is like, shows up, hey, can I join in? It's like, yeah, sure. You seem cool. You got supplies. That bites me in the ass later on. And
I think I know which guy you're talking about. Is this like
no
relatively early on or no?
I don't think you've gone to him yet. You might.
There was a dude in like chapter 3 or early chapter 4 that was like real mad and then tried to get me to let him in or something. And I was just like, yo, use dead and put an arrow through his eye. So
I didn't know if that I've yet to put an arrow in someone's eye. So I want to play this a third time now. Thank you.
I don't know if there are any consequences from that. I haven't gone further along, really.
But yeah, it's they do a really good job when it comes to like that part of the game, giving a lot of options and an insane amount of just like everyone's playthrough is going to be different. So when it comes to the second act and the third act, if they choose to have like, you know, recurring characters and bring them back, it's going to be like a Walking Dead-esque challenge, I feel.
Or just, even like a Mass Effect-esque challenge.
And then the other side of it, the combat, I really didn't have, except for one scenario, I didn't have a problem with the combat. And while it does have faults, I sort of used that to my advantage. But I'm going to let Shinboy talk about it instead.
So,
why do you hate the combat, Shinboy? Why is the combat complete garbage?
First, explain the combat to see if I guess.
Combat is turn, quote unquote, turn based strategy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, in the most literal sense, it's my team gets a go, and then the enemy team gets a go, and then
No. That's not what you mean. You mean one of your units gets to go, then one of their units gets to go.
Oh, okay.
That is the more simplistic version. So if it's a 4-on-8, the four-sided team is going to go twice as much.
Yep, and I've had people die because of that, and I think it is hot bullshit.
Yep.
Whereas, I also think
weird.
That if you kill someone, okay, say this is what a good strategy game combat system would be like, even if they were doing this. It would be like, oh man, this enemy is going next, and he's low. I'm going to kill him so he doesn't go, right? That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that happens in the Banner Saga, a different enemy is just moved up, and they get their turn anyway.
Oh.
There's no, like, turn canceling, if you will, by killing something.
So, that plus the strength mechanic, that being that the player's HP is also their damage rating, or to better explain it, if you have 8 strength and you take 3 damage, you are now doing 3 less damage. So your standard damage rating is now subtracted by 3 damage.
I think it's actually like your strength minus their armor is how much damage you do.
The armor also plays into it. Yeah.
Minimum of 1.
But, okay. Hmm. So I looked at the turn-based thing as basically the not the big guys, because if you leave them low health, they will actually summon reinforcements. Pro tip, you want to kill those guys when they do the sword radar thing, whatever.
Yeah.
The tuning fork, that's the word. And then the slingers, I would kill those guys. But the middle
slingers are the biggest pain in the ass.
I hate those slingers so much. The medium armor guys, like the middleweights, I would intentionally go for them first and do my best to leave them at 1 HP. And this is a pro strat. This is, I guess, technically spoilers, but this is just a good strat against them. Because you are basically you are flooding the enemy's turn with just pointless turns where they can't do anything. So if you try to kill them, you were and like that, then after I would take those guys down, then I would focus the big guys because they would have to wait 4 or 5 rotations before they could get another attack in. And then once I got those guys managed, then I'd start taking everybody down. And
So is there a like agility mechanic in this, or does everyone just get a turn no matter what?
It's just straight turn order. There's no way to edit it. You can't like increase your speed to get more turns or anything. Like you can't you can't cast like slow or hastiga or anything.
Well,
like that.
No,
it is
there,
dumb. High
there
five.
There is a Varl that you get later on who his special ability is to make it so that whoever he like calls upon is the next on your side to go. So you can play around with the order on that. There's a couple things like they make an effort
to make it so that you want to be mobile and play around with like the strategy of the game. But for the most part, my guy is pretty much just like the maybe like the first third of the round, we'd do some moving to sort of like position. But after that, it's just, all right, hunker down and focus these guys, and we aren't moving.
It makes
anymore.
You play super reactionary, which isn't really that fun.
Yeah.
What I like about those types of games is, I guess Fire Emblem is the example I brought up last time, is in that game, and I guess, Cynic, you could agree or disagree with this, is all about like setting up and executing, as opposed to this, where you sort of, like I said, have to play super reactionary.
Well, I would say yes, I agree with that, in that if you mean setting up as in I would take my tank and put him in a choke point, and I know all the enemy has to go to that choke point to get to me, so they will spend their entire turn order slamming up against my tank and usually dying because he's a badass. That's how I can kind of like position and be active, like actually have an effect on combat in the future for my current actions. Is that kind of what you mean?
You're setting up your unit in a particular way to execute a specific plan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The good thing about, okay, so the way I'm seeing this is it's kind of an interesting direction, because it's kind of as if the Banner Saga has come, well, this is the case. It's come from a Western like turn-based game angle, and RPGs, or JRPGs specifically, or TRPGs, JTRPGs, I don't know.
Tactical RPGs.
Japanese tactical RPGs specifically, JTRPGs, have come from the other angle, where they've come from your Final Fantasies, etc., where it's all about turn order and manipulating turn order and having speed, etc. So what you have on the left-hand side, I'm using my hands here, you can't see them, whatever. Banner Saga has come from the point where it's more like a board game or a strategy game, where it's all about player one goes, then player two goes, then player one goes, then player two goes, and player one goes, and player two goes. So it's a very methodical approach to how to interact with AI or another player in a game, and especially since it's rooted in the multiplayer, because Banner Saga started as a multiplayer game, right?
Yeah, like so as the factions version of this, when it's like it's going to be a 6-on-6, how the faction scaling works is like Shinbo, you're familiar with, like you can level up your guys so they're level 2 or level 3 or whatnot.
Yeah.
And with that, they get bonus stats and sometimes improved ability, improved skill to their power. That is the rating system, is how powerful your guys are. So, like, there's no ranking. It's just like, oh, you're going to have 6 level 1 guys versus 6 level 1 guys. And when it's two humans playing each other with that turn-based system, it works. And like, that's how, actually how I learned that, like, leave this guy at 1 HP, because now you've ruined, like, you've ruined a round for the guy.
Right.
Versus exactly. AI, so I don't think, like, I think this might've been a case of the testers were like, were so close to, like the mechanics in the engine. They couldn't see that this would be an issue or as big an issue to new players. Right. As maybe they thought.
Well, just specifically, it comes down to that outnumbered or overnumbering the enemy, right? Specifically in that case, this has a large effect upon the strategy of combat, because coming from the other side of it, which is JRPGs, JRPGs, especially tactical JRPGs, are predicated upon this feeling of you have a small band of dudes and you're going up against a huge amount of enemies, like maybe 2 to 3 times to 4 times the amount of people are on the map than what you have. And that's all about the manipulation of agility, speeds, turn order, just getting it to the point where either you have two options. Either your dudes act so quickly and so freaking ferociously that you will just trample over the enemy as quickly as possible, which is what I did in Typically Fire Emblem, essentially. Or you'd, from the other direction, where they just, because they have so few people, you just make them as beefy as possible. So you don't have to move as far. You let them come to you and then just destroy them, stonewall them, just wear them down because you're just so tanky. And that kind of manipulation, at least in the JRPG side, accommodates for this whole aspect of being outnumbered or you having more people than the enemy, because if you have more people than them, you'll find that if you're playing a tactical JRPG, you just overwhelm them, and the match will be done within one or two turns. It'd be very, very quick. And that's kind of how they balance things like random battles and stuff like that, because you can have that kind of variance in playtime, etc., because everything's based on that agility system, essentially what is a character statistics based turn order versus the Banner Saga, which is the other way, which is a strict numbers based turn order, which has a number of units based turn order, which is very different.
I don't have a problem with that, just because it's a difference in style at face value. It's just the little things, like I said before, where if you kill someone, it doesn't remove their turn. Stuff like that. That really bothers me.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm not getting anywhere. I feel like the battle's getting harder as I take things down, which shouldn't be the case.
The best way I can equate, the best excuse I could make for them, I guess, is that, the enemy's getting closer and closer to being backed in a corner, so they're going to be more and more desperate at fighting.
Yeah, sure.
Up until it goes down to the last guy in which, the rotational turn is gone. It's just
I've had a case where it was only two slingers left, and had an enemy maybe 5 units away from them, and then everyone else was relatively far away because they were off killing other things. And that dude died somewhat because in the process of moving my units over to kill these things, they just kept hitting him repeatedly. And I was like, "This is dumb."
But you do have that other balancing factor though in Banner Saga, in that there's no permadeath. So you can literally just roll with that. It doesn't really matter, at least as far as
I've had one character die from losing a fight, and the story progressed.
Yeah, I lost a fight, and then it was just fade to black next chapter, and I was like, "What happened here?"
Wow. Oh, okay. That's kind of interesting. I never considered losing a fight.
Wait, was that from?
It recurred to me.
Shimbo, was that from 2 to 3?
Probably.
Okay.
I think so. It was it was Rook's side.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Just going over the different chapters. 4 was definitely it's definitely a tough one starting off if you're not prepared. I don't want to give advice because that could lead to spoilers, and it's definitely it's a tough chapter. But then, that is also the one that I don't know if you got this message, Cynic, but it was during chapter 4 I sent you a text basically saying, "Holy, shitballs, you need to play this game."
Because
there's something completely amazing, I think, that happens in chapter 4 that is . I don't really want to describe because I would be ruining the moment.
I was first sold on Banner Saga the moment I heard it was ex-BioWare guys writing it. I was like, the writing's going to be solid.
Well, because as much as I dislike a lot of the combat systems, everything else, the Oregon Trail aspects of it, if you will, are all super top-notch. Yeah, I think that part's super fun.
I will say that...
Maybe not fun, but great.
I guess my mismanagement of Renown and the Oregon Trail style of just holding stuff basically made chapter 6 and 7 extremely rough. Right. I always finish the game. Yeah. I always complete it, but it's always just in the last.
I got a game over because I did something silly.
Wow. Oh, jeez.
But it just spits you back to the nearest checkpoint, which was 2 seconds.
I'm kind of curious, what did you do?
I was like, which one of these options will not make me fight things in a regular turn-based combat scenario? So it was one of the war situations, and I just sort of sent my dudes out and stood back and lost.
Oh, no.
Because it's gotten to the point where I'm looking at these options, instead of which one would this character do or which one would I do, it's gotten to the point where, okay, which one of these is least likely to end in a combat scenario?
Oh, no.
Yep.
I guess that's what happens when the combat just doesn't click with you, which is,
That's a bummer.
It's driven me to go back to Fire Emblem.
Which, as I was going to say, you've gotten into playing Fire Emblem now.
Yeah, I messaged Thurb and I trolled the hell out of him. I was like, one message was, "Thurb, the Banner Saga has inspired me." Next message, to go back to Fire Emblem.
He's like, I knew this was going to be good.
Are you playing Awakening again, or are you going back to previous Fire Emblems?
No, I'm playing Awakening, not again. I'm going and doing all the paralogues that I didn't do first time through.
Ah, yeah, sure.
Some of those are real rough.
Are they? Aren't all the paralogues the one where you just get your children back?
Yeah, but the thing is, a lot of times they'll be across the map and they can't die.
You didn't ridiculously optimize your team, did you? Like, you have a pretty nice team, but not like just.
No. This is like, you better get to them in two turns across the map or they're going to die.
Yeah, see, my team is all. Well,
see, I didn't grind for 80 dudes.
Like, they're all Dark Flyers. So, no, that's false. Half of them are sorcerers, and the other half are Dark Flyers, and I just put the sorcerers on the Dark Flyers, and they fucking fly the fuck across the map.
No, because I don't think that's fun. my best people are probably Donald as a hero, because he just destroys things.
Yeah.
I have Muriel as a sorcerer, maxed out.
Right, sorcerers are pretty strong.
I have Virion as a sniper because the longbow is great.
I do not use any bows on my team.
So. And then I have another best person is probably Tarja as whatever the top tier like dark mage is.
Oh yeah.
She just doesn't die.
Yeah, you use Nosferatu and just you heal faster than they can. It's crazy.
Anyway. Yep.
You know, I get that game is that I really like the mechanics of that game. I just don't feel any.
Just ignore the story, whatever. Act like it's not even there.
But I did all the paralogues. I did all the paralogues. I got all the characters. I made kids. I leveled all the kids. I played the game for the 40 or 50 hours. Like it's,
the last one.
It was a good game.
The last one I just did the other day was Noir, which is. Tarja's kid. That backstory is extremely messed up.
Yeah, but he's an asshole. I don't like him. He's such a freaking. He's wait, the dude. She, right? He's like the.
She wait, which one's? Noir is like the really bipolar archer who starts out as an archer.
Oh yeah, that backstory is fucked.
Yep.
She's.
But all that stuff. The main story is not great, but all of those individual support stories are all really good.
Yeah. Well. I talked about this earlier, but I don't like the way they fall in love.
Happens in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, I don't like that. But all the kids' backstories are usually awesome because you find out about the dark future and all that kind of stuff. That's really cool. I like all that stuff. Speaking of games you've gone back to and played a second time.
Uh-oh.
I beat Dark Souls again.
Oh, that's another game I just don't get.
After specifically saying I will never go back to that goddamn game ever again, after Patrick Klepek started playing, I felt the need, the hunger, the will to fight. Yep.
Therb, are you on this Dark Souls hype train?
I mean, like, I'm maybe for Dark Souls 2, but I've seen so much of Dark Souls 1, the sort of like the thing that would be enticing to me is sort of like I already know everything.
Yeah, see, that's the big negative.
This is the Dark Souls hype train to me.
Yeah.
Have any of you seen the recent, or relatively speaking, War of the Worlds with Tom Cruise?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I'm familiar with it.
You know that part when they're standing at like the railroad crossing on the road, and that like train goes by just straight on fire?
Yes.
That is the Dark Souls hype train, except there are a ton of people on the on fire train that are all just loving it, and I'm just standing at the platform watching it go by, bewildered.
Like, I didn't actually. I do know what it is. The draw of Dark Souls, like why I played Dark Souls again after saying I never would again, is that the feeling of beating stuff in that game is. So good, so satisfying, and seeing Patrick like beat a boss on his first time through and that kind of stuff just made me go, "I can fucking do that! I can fucking do that!" And I went back and I did it, and that was
you can one shot Capra Demon, right?
Yeah, he walks up to Capra, owns his face. Like, I'm going to do that now. And I went out and just fucking did it. And I felt, yeah. And of course, I think, I hate to say it, but I think Patrick's a little bit better at the game than I am. But my dude is overleveled, so it doesn't really matter. So I pretty much played along with him and beat the game alongside him. So when Brad Shoemaker picked up Demon Souls...
Oh, God, you didn't play Demon Souls 2, did you?
I saw a mound of challenge that was yet untapped. A game I had not played before.
You know, if you're a fan of Dark Souls and Demon Souls, there's a game you might like called Spelunker? Yeah, it's Spelunker. That's the name of it, right, yeah.
No, we're talking about good games here, Thurb.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
I've played 27 hours. Try Spelunky. 27 hours in a week of Demon Souls? Yeah.
Jesus.
Like, God. Every moment I wasn't at work or reading, I was playing that game. I'm level, like, 90. Like 91 Jesus. Or something like that.
I mean, Shimbo, at least I'm playing other games, right? That's like the Spelunky thing is okay, right? As long as I'm playing other stuff too.
Sure.
Oh man, yeah, I'm like halfway through that game. No, I'm almost finished that game. To be honest, like, I've seen all the worlds. I just haven't beat all the bosses. I've just kind of like poked my head in places, looked around, leveled up a bit. Gotten the best weapons in the game, gotten the best armors in the game, that kind of stuff. You know the things you do when you play Dark Souls.
You do RPGs.
I just want to say that. I just want to say, hey guys, Demon's Souls is pretty good. And if you have PS Plus, you might actually already own it.
I don't.
Because I'm just playing my PS Plus.
It hasn't been out in North America on PS Plus, I don't think.
Oh, no.
We got Dragon's Dogma Dark Arisen at some point, though, so I have that on my PS3.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're similar. Just
and also speaking of games, I bought all the Final Fantasies because they're on sale.
All of them.
I was going to ask you: is 13-2 worth it for $9 as someone who played like 20-something hours of 13 and never finished it?
No, it's only worth it if you finish 13, in my opinion.
I mean, is it worth it to just look up the ending of 13 and then play 13-2?
Well, there's that awesome trailer that is just like a 10-minute like.
I watched that and it didn't make lick of sense.
I can't
wait because I'm waiting to watch that when the game comes out because I need that refresher. But it looks so adorable. I want to save it up. I want to save it up.
Uses a lot of the FF6 like spell casting animations and stuff.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I've been playing FF6. That's a good game.
Yeah, dude. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, so 13-2. I think that... Like, what made you stop playing 13 would be my question. Like, it depends what you didn't like about it.
I got through what people call the bad parts to what people call the relatively good parts.
Yeah.
And then, specifically, I thought it was kind of too open, so I put it down for a little while and then picked it back up. Right. And just got one of the... One of the dungeons, one of the towers, I don't remember exactly where, there was just one or two fights where I just couldn't beat. I don't know why. It was a boss.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was just I don't want to do this anymore.
Well, let's put it this way. I steamrolled through most of 13 too, but two of the boss fights, one of them was like a hard limit and I had to go back and grind a bit to beat it. And the last boss fight of the game, the boss fight I had to grind for, it turned out I had to grind a whole bunch more to do that boss fight. And I was like, no, I'm not going to grind. So I'm going to sit here and play the shit out of this game. And in that, like, I was like constantly stanced, like slot swapping my team, constantly keeping active, always making sure I was staying out of like direct lines of fire, specific moves, just like being on top of the game. It took me 1 hour and 20 minutes continuous to beat that boss. 3 hours total. 3 hours total because I died twice. The final run was 1 hour and 20 minutes of constant fighting to beat the boss underleveled. If you don't want to do that, don't play that game.
Fair enough because I don't want to do that.
Yeah, it was one of the best moments of my gaming life when I beat him because it was like actual – I think for once in my life, I employed actual skill rather than just being overleveled or something. And yet, yeah, that was awesome, but it's not something I think a normal person would do. Like, so, I don't know. It's definitely worth. If you've seen that little like short thing, I don't know how much the short tells you because I'm saving it up and I haven't watched it yet. But the plot
basically,
of 13
like, I want to say 8 minutes for each game or 4 minutes for each game. I don't remember. There's some multiple of eight in there.
Yeah, and yeah, no, the 13-2's got a really interesting plot, and it ends in a really cool way. Like I was not expecting.
Apparently,
that
it just goes batshit crazy at some point.
It just goes
off the rails.
Goes all at some point you're fighting this dragon thing and I don't know, but yeah, it's really cool.
Is it your typical recommend. Like oh god this regular dude just turned into a demigod because it's a JRPG moment?
No, it's like oh there's that twist you expected the whole game, but no, there's another twist behind that twist, and that was
oh god,
yeah, it was great. It was great, and then it ends with a third twist. It was the best.
RPGs are silly.
No, I legitimately like the plot of that game. I don't think a normal person would enjoy it if they don't want to grind. So
yeah. It has that really bad metal chocobo song.
I've like with Demon Souls, which you know what, I'm going to say this. I hate to circle back to a game neither of you care about, but Demon Souls might actually be a better game than Dark Souls.
Like, that's what I'm saying, man. Hop with me on this Demon Souls hype train. There's a lot less fire than the Dark Souls hype train.
There's an element of interestingness in the Demon Souls world because, like, how it works in Demon Souls, obviously, you're hopping between entirely disparate worlds and that. So there's like a continuity within a world that is lacking in Dark Souls, because Dark Souls, like, you're in some place, except for Anelondo, which is very contiguous. Everywhere else, because they link to the other places, it feels really weird, because, like, why would this, like, open valley kind of area with green grass link to this, like, eternal night place just by, like, walking under a bridge? Like, why, how does that, what is the meaning here? Like, how does this work? Whereas, because every area is distinct in Demon's Souls, it's very contiguous. Also, there's far less equipment in Demon's Souls. So there's far less choice. So there's a lot more ease of optimization. In that, like, part of the reason I like playing the Souls games is that I really like getting into, like, the deep mechanics and, like, looking at weight ratios and armor to weight ratios and item loads and that kind of stuff.
I like doing that type of stuff, but part of the reason I haven't played those games is because all of that information, the UI for it is just the worst.
Yeah, just garbage. Just hot.
I don't want to have to deal with that.
It's just constantly on fire. Like I open the menu, hit start, and then go down. It's like, oh god, and then it's like, oh, I just want to close that because it just the flames. It's just clearly a garbage fire. Without the websites to assist with that game, it would be hot garbage.
I shouldn't need a website to look up the proper stats for a piece of gear that I have in my inventory.
You are absolutely right, but I don't think they fixed that with Dark Souls 2. Which is two games later.
Yeah, well, what is your opinion on the hype train of Dark Souls 2? Is it also on fire? Or, I mean, like...
That train has just kept, the original Dark Souls train has just kept rolling.
Okay. and like, still been on fire. The fire never goes out.
Correct. I mean, if anything, the fire has intensified.
Let's put it this way. I assuming I'm not in boot camp, which I don't know if I will be by then, I will play the hot shit out of Dark Souls 2. But partially it's because I think I know what to expect from that game already. Like, Vinny made a very interesting point, like, in their video recently, which was he's not sure if the UI is better or if he just knows what to look for now when he reads it. So it might not be a case of it actually being better. It's just that now that I've played two Souls games, I can look at something like the agility stat and like the two lines of description for the agility stat and know exactly what they're talking about. It says like, and it increases the quickness of like certain animations right? That's all it says. And someone who's played a Souls game, you're like, oh, okay. So it maybe reduces like the rolling or the dodge times, or maybe increases the invincibility frames. And you know how to test that. And that's the kind of thing a Souls player will get out of that UI now. Whereas you, for example, would probably look at most of that UI and go, I just don't care. And no, I don't know. I'll put points into
strength. I don't care is the perfect three words you would pick.
Exactly. Yeah. So no, I think Dark Souls 2 is a game made for peoples who have been brainwashed, like myself, into liking things that actively don't like you back. It's like a relationship that should have ended years ago, but for some reason you still care about her.
Because like... with those games, if there's like a good example of quote unquote bullshit, which really isn't if you're paying super close attention, is like that GIF that's floated around the internet of Vinny getting kicked off the cliff in Dark Souls.
Right? Did you hear about that though with Patrick?
No, hold on. Okay, go ahead, Jim, and then you can go ahead. Like that stuff, I don't mind. Like that's just what that game is. But it's the bad UI that I just wouldn't be able to live with. I can live with the rest because that's what that game is. That's what it's. It knows where its bread is buttered, if you will. But, like, just learn – get a UI designer in there or anyone with a pair of eyes.
Like, it's obvious story. And I don't think – I think the point of a good UI is to shed light upon what you can do. Like, it's to inform whilst being minimalistic and visually catching, obviously. But it's to inform. That's the primary – point of a UI. And Dark Souls is kind of interesting because the entire point of the game is to be subtle and obvious story. So those two things intrinsically clash. So when you look at their UI, it doesn't do what you think a UI should do. And I think that's their intention. But at the same time, I can very much see why someone would go, well, fuck that. I don't like Jeff Gerstmann's got a very valid viewpoint in that, no, fuck that game. I don't like how it looks at it, like how it plays. Fuck it.
And I don't see myself. That's another thing. This is purely just my opinion, but I don't get the love for that game's art style or that series art style.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Those games are ugly.
it's kind of like if you look at like a PS2 game, and
they would do look like PS2 games. Okay.
Yeah, they look like PS2 games, but if you look at Final Fantasy X, for example, some parts of that game are just visually striking even today. And it's not because of the visual quality, it's because of the specific art direction, right? And I will agree that the Souls games run like shit, and that engine is a piece of trash, like many other things in those games. But some parts of those games are legitimately visual striking. And his... that interview with the Souls artist and the director of the latest Souls games, I've forgotten his name, where he talks about how his design's all about dignity and how dignity can be, that's how he tries to like, he doesn't want to go for the gory or disgusting. He wants to have everything in his world has to have this sense of dignity. And like Vinny and Brad, I can see that. And that's why I respect that game's look so much. Not to say
I just want to point out, you just said Vinny agrees that the game should have dignity.
No, that the game has dignity, which is kind of scary. what were you saying about Patrick before, Thurbleton?
Oh, it was just, Patrick got to that same part where the skeleton is about to kick him. Was like, oh, I know what's going to happen. Get this. 5 seconds later, he was dead.
It's because the same spot gets kicked off again.
He got kicked off. He knew it was coming.
It was great. The best moment in Patrick's playthrough was there's this boss fight called the Bed of Chaos, which is like this puzzle boss where essentially you have to do things in a specific order. And the last part of it is to... like there's this massive tree monster in front of you, right? And it's swinging its arms all over the place. And you have to run past its swinging arms, jump into this single branch that it extends from it. And either side of the branch is a bottomless pit. Like this is the epitome of a Souls game. So you have to jump with those terrible like jumping controls off like this ledge onto this specific branch and then run the rest of the way to the center of the boss, right? That's the way to end the boss. So Vinny spent like a good 40 to 60 minutes just running from this the spawn point to the boss to just run that last like 20 yards or 30 yards in game space off the edge and onto that branch. And he kept missing the branch, or he'd get onto the branch and there'd be like a firestorm. He'd die whilst on the branch, or he'd have the exact right trajectory and then get hit by something midair and just fall off to the abyss. And he'd do that like, he had to do like 50 runs just to get into that fucking branch and finish that boss, right? Patrick's like fifth or sixth attempt, he goes off to the right, jumps, and in midair, a tree branch comes across and cups him. It looks like it just like gently grabs him and then deposits him on the branch. Yeah, and deposits him on the branch right in the right place. And the beautiful thing is Patrick played with a scare cam. So you can just see his like mouth drop open and he's like goes ecstatic and just like runs as quickly as he can towards to finish the boss off. And he's like laughing his head off. And like I remember being in the chat and the whole chat just fucking exploded with people going, "Oh my god!" And yeah, only in a Souls game can just I stupid shit like that. Being
a good
awesome.
Way to describe those games is the Souls games are the best terrible games ever made.
Yeah, yeah. I will agree with that. I will 100% agree with that. Up there with 50 Cent, Blood in the Sand.
Yes.
the best bad games were made.
Oh, God.
Well, that's all
have
I
you actually played
speak.
That game?
Which one? 50 Cent Blood in the Sand?
No. Yeah. No, I've not played that. I've played what some would call a bad game right now, only in that it is not quite yet a game. It's definitely got game things to it, but it's not fully fleshed game. And I have no way saying to it. DayZ, standalone.
Oh, okay. DayZ?
Oh, right.
Yes.
Standalone.
In that so it is extremely alpha.
So none of this, we're calling it a beta, but it's really a demo nonsense.
I've gotten stuck inside a building 3 times now. Like not
inside
like,
the wall?
Yeah, I go inside the building like the area you're supposed to, and then somehow fall to the ground since it's like, you know, upstairs or something, and then can't get out because there's walls there. So I am inside a building in the area you're not supposed to be in. Two sounds times.
Am I the only one who finds it like absolutely fucking hilarious that this started as a broken beta and then went off and became its own thing and is coming back as just another broken beta? I think that's absolutely fucking.
Well,
gorgeous.
No. It's impressive because it's now a broken alpha, so they've actually gone back.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Jeez.
Like, at what point, like, what did they do for those last, like, 2 years of what it was?
Well, they moved it from a mod to, like, its own thing.
Yeah, the issue is that it wanted to be a standalone, its own thing. But I think the biggest issue that they're facing is that, and this is just, they wanted to be a small team, and they, like, this is just the option that was presented to them that seemed like the smartest one. They didn't make it from the ground up. They actually used a flight simulator engine, I believe.
That makes sense.
What?
I believe it's one of Bohemia's engines for a flight game.
Sure, it's not like just their Arma engine for the flying stuff.
No, because if it was their Arma engine, they'd still like they had to gut a lot of stuff that they didn't really need.
This is very confusing. Why wouldn't you use the engine for the shooter?
Because the engine for the Arma has stuff like squads, which you can like take all that out. You only really need the direct chat to cut that out. The way the vehicles, they work differently because, frankly, there's no tanks. So you can take all that out. There's no, like, jet planes. There's, the vehicles on their own are, like, they're completely different, but they're still important.
Okay. They have to remove more if they use the armor stuff.
Yes. The inventory system, it was easier to just make a whole new one rather than use armor, so they gutted all that too.
Jeez.
And also, I think if they ever go around to making a new map, which I hope they do make a new map instead of just using like
Right now, it's the classic one is Chinaris, which is the main focus of it. But also, like, you know, people have taken other, like, the Fallujah map and all that. And then for the DayZ mod and made it our DayZ versions of. Basically, they're having to hand paint a canvas the size of, like, you know, Boston.
God damn it.
It's like it's a massive map. It's like a weekend. And so they've been like, you know, they want to go into each house for each like building in a village for each village on the map and place a spawn point for every item that could be there. And then the engine will, like, you know, randomly generate for each time. Like, okay, this time there's going to be a can of beans in there. The next time a backpack. Next time a pair of jeans.
Mm-hmm.
If they built it from scratch, it would be a much easier time, I imagine.
Yeah, but
I
don't know.
Well, no, because you're hand making the house because they reuse a lot of the assets. Like they make a dozen types of houses, and then that's what they put around the place. So if they just have a default house and they already have all the locations inside, it'll be much
Bravely
easier.
Default house.
Yes, the Bravely default house.
Bravely is such a good adjective. But whatever it is, an adverb, I don't know, but whatever. Bravely is so good.
I've run into like 5 people and 3 of them haven't tried to kill me, but I've also like, one of them was the same level I was and that was just like fresh spawn. The second, we were both running from zombies and he didn't really, I guess he didn't feel like killing me because I was a fresh spawn again. And the third guy, we were both in a hospital in the middle of the night. No, it was more like 8 o'clock. It wasn't pitch black yet. But I'm just I'm looking on the second floor, getting cans and whatnot, and I hear footsteps above me. And I was like, oh, man, it's a zombie. So I clear the end of the hallway and go back towards the stairwell on the other end, and there's a guy with a rifle, and he's just like, it's not raised and pointed at me, but it's just, we both stare, and then I just... I casually just say, oh, like on the direct chat, oh, I thought I heard somebody upstairs. Hey, and then just start walking away.
That seems like a poor decision. You probably shouldn't have done that.
I didn't have a weapon to hit him with.
You can't just like straight punch a dude?
You can, but if they're wearing a helmet, it has no effect.
Oh, weird.
Well, he has a rifle. Like you've already lost.
Yeah, I mean, like even if I punch him, he's like, going to just shoot
me. You punch him hard enough.
Yeah.
So this is not like knife versus bat. This is not like a oddly very symmetrical piece of combat. This is a dude with a rifle versus another guy. Who's
if you Xenoclash punch him, might be able to take.
Well,
him
and the thing is, I don't think punching actually kills anybody. It just knocks them down, and then they'll get right back up. but that being said, the other two people I met was the server I was on got like shut down or something, so I jumped on the next one. They only had like 3 people, and it was a very strange coincidence that the 3 people suddenly appeared right next to me in this massive map, and then promptly chased me down and shot me. So I'm thinking those guys might have been, you know, hacking a bit.
There might have been some shenanigans going on.
Yeah. The only other time I quote-unquote have died was I was inside a building and then logged out and then logged back in with, you know, all my stuff gone and a fresh spawn. So I chalked that up to being an alpha. I was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Wait, so... is it too late for this game? Like, it has, like... Because DayZ was a massive thing when it hit 2 years ago, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Anyway. Right.
But now we have stuff like... It's... Right. Yeah, the DayZ thing is more or less like they've done a lot of improvements that have made it so there's a bit more option for communication between people. But I also feel like the time for trusting and talking to people and not just shooting them outright, that window has closed from when DayZ first, like the standalone first got released to about now. Like, you can follow this on, like, the PC Gamer has, like, every week one of their employees will, like, play some and writes a blog about it or whatnot. And it's just him, like, having misfortune events, a couple times of him trusting people, and then he trusts people, and that you know, turns out badly. He gets, like, you know, either stabbed in the back or robbed or something. And now he just straight up will kill anybody on site. He just doesn't trust anybody now. And I feel for everybody that, like, that, you know, they've started just not to no longer trust people.
That's part of the game, right? It's the why the game was so interesting before was because there's Mexican standoffs you can get into where nobody trusts each other, but no one wants to kill anyone or start a gunfight, and everyone just kind of backs away. Like what you did, like the gym stairs. Like that was essentially...
The issue with DayZ is that the zombies aren't really a threat. And especially now that, like, I can deal with zombies, and it's more or less... Like, if you get a melee weapon of any kind, you can handle the zombies, at least in their current form. I'm not sure if their AI is going to get improved, but... it's just like it's human versus human now, which is awesome when you're fully decked out and have like 8 hours to spare. But not for me. So I don't know. I really just got the game. So either I get robbed or someone ends up robbing me with the phrase saying, "I need your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle helmet." And then I'll be like, "All right, purchase paid for. I can uninstall this."
You could be that person.
That's the best Terminator
movie. You
can
live that dream.
Because, I mean, like, because you can hold someone at gunpoint, handcuff them, and take their clothes, their boots, and if they have one, a motorcycle helmet.
Yeah.
There's no vehicles in the game, so you can't take their motorcycle.
Okay, so, Cindy, you're asking if it's too late? The fact that it's still, what number is it? Number 2 on Steam right now and has sold over 1 million copies in a month and a half?
Oh, okay.
It's not too late, I guess.
Yeah, throughout the entirety of the Steam winter sale, it was, or for you, the summer sale, it was either the 1 or 2 position.
Without it being on sale.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And
why is that, do you think?
Opposed to other, I think, namely the notoriety of the game, and people are telling these really impressive stories with the game, but to their credit, like, if you look at it, like, if you mouse over it, it has this in all caps saying, like, warning, this is a broken-ass game. And so that's why, like, I can forgive it for me losing all my stuff and me falling through the world and a bunch of other dumb stuff. But, yeah, they've taken every step to say, like, yo, this is going to be broken. And don't expect it for at least another year to be, like, you know, out of beta.
Yeah, because it says here, like, the last sentence is... "We strongly advise you not buy and play the game at this stage unless you clearly understand what early access means and are interested in participating in the ongoing development cycle."
Yeah. Please don't purchase unless you want to actively support
it. It's also, you're probably getting a lot of the people that were interested in DayZ but didn't want to have to go through the hassle of buying a different game than installing a mod and all that nonsense.
I find it really weird that number one is Rust and number two is DayZ. Like, this is not too late. This is like the inverse of the Dark Souls thing, where I have no idea why people find these games interesting.
Well, the Rust one is it's like the Minecraft, except it's like this weird scale. Like, imagine the Garry's Mod level of just like dumbness thrown.
I see why you said imagine the Garry's Mod level.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's made by the Garry's Mod guy. But it's like you start off. I'm hoping pants, but probably just completely naked with a rock, and then from that you can make an axe. And then from that, you can make a shotgun.
What?
Yeah. And
I
you
see
can,
screenshots what? Where people have, like, silenced assault rifles. I'm like, where did you get that from?
Yeah, not like, you can be in, like, all tactical armor with, like, you look like a cheesy cat burglar sort of thing. Like, you have, like, this beanie hat, you're wearing all black, you look like a hipster going to a poet jam or something. With a shotgun, a tactical shotgun.
I thought to get those weapons, you had to like go into the irradiated areas and like explore and stuff to get those.
There's different ways to do that. Like it's, if you have an axe, you can kill the zombies and go into the irradiated areas. There's various ways to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like the main aspect of that is the building side of it. But it almost it's like they're trying to go all Eve-esque with it, all DayZ with, like, you know, you can you have permanence in the world, but they don't have the server stability to allow for like US/Russian alliances to maintain 24/7 observations on your compound. And it's still just like the reason why I went with DayZ over Rust is because it's just this very small island. It's like you could probably Chinars, I'm guessing, is like, you know, twice, if not larger, in size. And the graphics on Daisy are really good.
Because the Arma stuff all looks really good.
Yeah, like, the one thing that game needs is a goddamn auto-run button.
Oh, I no longer want to play that game.
You run a lot. And if only there was a button, it just, like, I wouldn't have to hold, I need a weight
or
something.
Is there, like, a sprint, at least, toggle?
Yeah, there's three modes. There's just your standard jog, your walk, and then, like, an all-out sprint.
Okay, because that's not as bad. I hate games that, like, say, I don't mind holding W if I also don't have to hold shift, is my point. If it's both, we got a problem.
It's confusing. I'll explain later if you ever end up getting that or Arma, how it works.
I played a bit of Arma 2, but I don't remember much about it.
Fair enough.
Except that it was really weird and hard to figure out how to do anything.
But yeah, anyway. I mean, those are games. I was trying to throw in a segue to talk about the Eve stuff, just because I think that is insane and crazy.
What?
It's insane and crazy.
The fact that there's a battle over the... Okay, you're familiar how Eve works, right?
Yes.
Like,
it's all of it. I know everything about Eve. I'm your Eve expert.
Make things requires a length of time that is considered like a week or a month. And because there is a monthly subscription tied to that, you can actually put a dollar value to constructing something. Namely, like a giant ship costs $5,000 or $3,000. Mm-hmm. And if there is a massive battle for a sector...
Sorry to cut you off. It's not just time. It's also that you can use in-game currency to pay for your subscription. So there's a direct correlation. There's a direct conversion rate.
Yeah. Well...
Not just time.
Yeah. Well, there's no direct relation, but there is a loose relation because they don't want there to be a direct relation because otherwise they're going to be considered a bank and have to pay this weird tax thing. So.
Oh, yeah. No, but I mean, there's in the same way that like Guild Wars 2 has gold to gems, it's similar to that. And that you can assign a in-game currency value with an extremely rough real-world currency value via how much of this third currency you can get with either.
But the difference between Guild Wars 2, which is like, you know, outfits, Eve has ships. Slightly more digitally tangible.
I was talking strictly about currency conversion.
But anyway, long and short
is... I like the idea of digital tangibility. Is that like Ghost in the Shell?
Sure.
Where you're like, I bought this sexy lady over here and she's digitally tangible. Yeah.
I was reading something weird about Ghost in the Shell the other day. I don't remember what it was.
There's going to be a real life version of it.
Live action one? Was that it?
Oh, geez.
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to go any well at all. I don't know. But I don't know. That anime is a little bit overrated in my opinion, but still pretty good. Still pretty good.
So anyway, Eve Online. Yeah. basically, there was a like someone didn't pay the tax or like the claim.
They didn't pay rent.
Yeah, they didn't pay the rent for this very valuable staging area that is like a prime real estate. And everyone and their mother and brother and second cousin showed up to try and like they try it like one side claimed it, but then the other side came into the revolt. And basically, there was a big fight that happened last year over like one ship showing up without any reinforcements, and this massive fight happened.
Yeah,
I want to say like 12 Titans, which is the largest class ship, lost or were destroyed. I want to say it was like 50 plus Titans were destroyed in this fight.
Yeah,
it was costing up to, in estimates, $330,000.
Okay, so I just want to say something here. Okay, I just want to.
The fighting lasted almost a day.
Entire 24 hours. I just want a little bit of real talk here. How much of this do you think stems from the fact that those dudes, that just nothing happens in Eve for months or years at end? So when something does happen, everyone just wants to throw down.
I mean, it's kind of how it works. Like,
I mean, like that is. It's like everyone is plotting and like scheming and like these behind the scene trades. Waiting for someone to slip up. Because if you think about it, all the major fights have happened because someone have either slipped up or we hear about corporate espionage.
Yeah.
So like reality,
which is slipping up in the, like, you know, I trust you sense.
Yeah, but I think that a lot of that stuff is overblown. I think what a lot of Eve actually is just a bunch of dudes sitting at their computers, or not, or just like having shit automated and sent to them, right? And just living normal lives and stuff while Eve happens in the background.
And then one day they're sitting at their 9-to-5 and they get a phone call.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm taking the next 2 days off.
Exactly. It's just like, oh, wait, something's actually happening in Eve today? Oh, God, I'd better be a part of this. And that's when things go down. Like, that's
I don't know,
literally
these
a
things,
case where everyone's so goddamn bored.
I don't know, because there's a lot of people who really like a lot of the things in that game.
Of course they do.
There's a lot going on.
It's becomes part of your life, I assume, when you invest that much time in it. It's kind of there. Especially if you're the type of person who does get notifications, it is literally a part of your everyday and will be continuously part of your everyday. So I can see how it would become meaningful to someone. And that's the case where I don't think those people wanted to lose $300,000 worth of ships in that battle. But I think that the fact that there was a battle incited a level of bloodlust and frenzy in those people, so they just threw the fuck down. Like, it was on when happened.
Like, it's they threw in with their big guns, and as near as I can tell, because like the way Eve works is that there is like the time dilation. Basically, if there's enough people in there, rather than lag the servers and break them, that just like the time slows down. And so that's why the fighting lasted for like a whole day. The fight was pretty much won after the first 5 hours or so. Everyone like, oh, we've committed, but we threw everything we have and it wasn't enough. Then when it came to like trying to escape, because of the time dilation, and this is from what my friends who have played the game told me, it's basically like, okay, well, as soon as somebody tries to make a break for it, once they get out of the time dilation, they're caught and killed. And the only reason, like, it's basically the fighting ended because the servers actually went down for maintenance.
That's pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. But yeah, I've
love that Eve exists for this type of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, and I can identify with them to some extent.
And again, I love everything about hearing about this game. I never, ever, ever want to play it.
No way in fuck. Just zero chance. I know Dave was into it for a while, but I think he's back out of it. And I have zero interest.
Well, he was in Dave Snyder, you mean, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was into it, but then like he was planning on being much less devoted when the kid came around.
Yeah, and then the kid did come around. So
yes.
Oh, man. Yeah, so is that the news for the week? I don't know. Does anything else happen this week?
I mean, the Gears of War thing from Epic to Microsoft.
But I found that absolutely hilarious, but
yeah, that's kind of, it's not really news. It was a matter of when, really.
Yeah, I think Danny O'Dwyer did a pretty good job of saying, like, you know, there's no really big titles coming out from Epic anymore. No more like Unreal Tournaments or anything like that. And so,
Oh, wait, hold on, something else happened.
Yes, they have a few games, but it's kind of a bummer that Epic is more or less going away.
Yeah.
Probably.
Whatever, their engine stuff is still good.
Well, yeah, the engine's great, but I mean, like, part of the reason why I love their engine was because of Unreal Tournament.
Well, yeah, they've always said that our engine's not done until we, you know, put out a game on it, but most of those people are not there, so.
Yeah.
Like, BioWare is not really BioWare anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
More or less. The doctors are not there. It's not BioWare.
Yeah.
I have hope for the next Dragon Age and Mass Effect.
I'm cautiously optimistic about the next Dragon Age.
Yeah, I reckon that'll be pretty cool.
But just looking at the Steam page reminded me. Did either of you play the first part of Burial at Sea for Bioshock?
No.
No, I did not, but I saw the trailer for the second one. That looks really good.
I watched it through.
Why did you watch the trailer for the second one without playing the first part there? That was a big mistake.
I don't plan on buying the first or the second one.
They're actually pretty good.
I watched the first one. It seemed okay.
It's pretty good.
I don't have any of the Bioshock 1 like nostalgia, so it was like, okay, all right, I can see where you're going with this. That makes sense.
The 3-minute thing for part 2 got me super hyped for part 2.
So who's that? Like Atlas or whatever the fuck his name is? Like, what's his significance?
He's with cool. you. He's the guy on the radio in the first game.
Ah, interesting. That's kind of cool. And Elizabeth seems like she's...
So spoilers for this. It doesn't actually... I'm not going to spoil the end of the, or anything.
Yeah, I'd argue spoilers. He's probably going to get back to Rapture. Atlas.
Well, it's not even that. It's just like this is not going to spoil anything about the first episode mm-hmm. of Burial at Sea, but Atlas is in the trailer for yeah. the second part, and that's what got me excited. Because yeah. yeah. it seems like where they're going with this is that they are setting up the original BioShock, which is a really interesting take.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
Right. Maybe. Like, I'm not sure if it's entirely certain whether this is the same world as that was. I guess they could say it is, and you couldn't really say anything to refute them. It just
geez.
At some point, it does make sense.
It would be awesome if, like, I don't know if this is going to happen, but, like, you escape to the surface, like the water surface, and you end up shooting that. Mm-hmm. You inadvertently get a plane shot down.
That would be so dumb. And something I wouldn't rule out, like, that's something they
I
could
forgot
very
that
well
there's
do.
A plane crash at the beginning of BioShock.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is. It's really dumb.
You end up swimming to yeah. a lighthouse, I think.
And you're, you mean just, like walking in water? It felt like you were just walking in the water with your head above the waterline.
I'm sorry that like 2007 swimming mechanics are not up to your standards.
Hey man, that's it was a post Tomb Raider world. You could have swimming. In a
also,
game.
Was about 30 seconds of a fairly lengthy game. Well, not fairly lengthy; it's pretty short, but longer than like 2 hours.
It's true. BioShock. Oh man, that's bringing back some.
BioShock.
Some relatively recent memories.
You should play
Ouya 2. The next Ouya is out.
You Woo. Should play Burial at Sea because Sandra Cohen is in it. That's the main reason.
I watched Burial at Sea.
Talking to Thera.
Oh.
Did you play BioShock there?
I played BioShock Infinite and I didn't make it all the way. I need to go back and play it again because I never made it to what was the theater one?
Oh,
Port
okay.
Frolic, Port Frolic. Yeah, I didn't make it to Port
Frolic. That's where Sam Cohen is, and he is the best character in that game.
Oh, okay.
Wait, is that the... is he the creepy guy? The really, really fucking creepy guy?
Andrew Cohen is the theater guy.
Yeah, God, that guy's creepy as fuck.
And he is in, as you saw, the first episode of Burial at Sea, and he is just as creepy, except in a way different way. Dudes.
Well, I don't think he's as creepy as the rabbit dudes are. The rabbit dudes are...
Rabbit slicers?
Whatever yeah. they are, oh. they're just creepy as hell.
What he makes you do is incredibly messed up, too. Not to ruin it, but I'm not going to say what it is.
In the original game or in...
No, what he has you do in the original game is pretty messed up.
Ah, okay. Interesting. So yeah, the Ouya 2 will cost you $129. It's one way to lose $129. I don't know.
What is that?
The Ouya 2.
Oh, the Ouya 2.
New Ouya. Yeah. You want to fund the fun?
Oh, God.
Some dude in the comments on the Giant Bomb article linked a Ouya Unboxing Regret Edition, or whatever it was called. Some dude being super sad about opening his Ouya.
You should probably end this podcast.
Oh, that's great. I need to watch that.
I'll put it in the show notes, and I'm running it in this notepad. shownotes.txt over here.
Let's see. Oh, the PlayStation Now beta is actually beta advance have gone out. That's cool. It's not going to come here for many years to the great old land of Australia, but you guys will get it soon. Hopefully mm-hmm. that's interesting.
Shinboy, do you have any plugs?
You all should play Fire Emblem and Zelda on the 3DS because that's pretty good too. Then my music plug for this week, because even though Squiddle's not here, I'm still doing my music plug, is actually his favorite Aerion album that we discussed on the show previously, Into the Electric Castle. That album's really weird, but it's also pretty good. Weird prog rock.
It's a weird name.
Nice.
The Electric Castle is a thing that people must enter, so it's not just some weird name.
Anyway. I mean, like that plug from last week, Nightwish, I think. Like that girl's got some pipes. She can.
Oh
sing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to see. Like I mentioned my other plug from last week, Iced Earth. Her other band, Revamp, is one of the opening acts for that show. So, I'm excited.
I always find it weird when artists have multiple bands. I don't know.
It's fairly common.
Yeah, I guess.
What is really common in a lot of the music I listen to is you'll just have it's like a circle, I guess you will, of vocalists or musicians, and they'll all just like guest on each other's things.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
That is really tying into my plug.
Oh, look at that. Set it up for you.
What's your plug, Doubleton?
My plug is a website called patreon.com, which it's sort of like Kickstarter, but where that funds one big thing and a lot of money. This is a little bit of money for like a little, like, you know, a tip jar, basically, like once a month sort of thing. And it was thought up by a musician called Jack Conte, or C-O-N-T-E. Conte? Conte. Mm-hmm.
How do you spell that, by the way?
Jack, C-O-N-T-E.
No. The website. I'm getting links for Patron Tequila, which is, I'm sure is what...
Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And he basically thought this up, but he's also a musician who is half of a band called Pomplamoose, the other half being, I can't remember her name. Whatever. It's this other girl. Beautiful singing lady. Lovely voice.
Oh, wait. Pomplamoose.
Yeah.
The guys on YouTube who like do the funny stuff with the puppet and the multiple. Oh, they're cool. They're cool. They have good covers.
I don't know if they have a puppet, but okay. but basically, all of the musicians in this circle around them, like, you know, Lauren O'Connell, Daniel Like the Sandwich, the other girl from Pomplamoose, who I can't remember right now, so I feel really
she's this cute chick with short hair?
Yeah, sure. Basically, them and a couple dozen others are part of this. And if you like music, I guess, or give it a shot. You might find some stuff you like. But yeah, that's my plug.
Wrote it
Pomplamoose.
Down.
I've got it. And then, yeah, I'm linking Shinboy to everyone to September.
Nika Harper. Like, if you don't like music, Nika Harper, formerly of Riot Games, community manager, now, like, she has one for writing, which is weird. It's just like,
that's interesting.
She'll just give you two short stories a month for, like, you know, at least $1 per two stories. I don't know. It's a super neat idea of something. If there's something in there you like, it's a not advertising way of people trying to make money off of YouTube videos.
Because the advertising business model is fucked.
Natalie Dawn is the lady's name.
Yes, and this grandmother can indeed dance. My plug for the week.
Oh, jeez.
Is. If you go to twitch.tv/ Patrick Klepek, you can see who someone's actually pretty good at Dark Souls, played Dark Souls. Is pretty much the entire play. He got most of his playthrough up on there, and I definitely think it's worth watching because I like watching someone do so well in his first time. Like, he is like legitimately impressive in his first time through that game. I was actually quite shocked. And beside that, if you like what you see there, subscribe to GiantBomb.com,
a website. What's about that?
Video games. It's a website about video games where they play video games on a website, and you can watch
the video game website.
Yeah,
I actually used my coupon to get one of those signed posters the other day.
Oh, dude, I missed out on the signed posters. I know there's like supposedly more, but I'll deal with not getting it. And I love that art anyway. And you can watch Breaking Brad. Demon Souls, which is now my favorite thing on the site. Because Brad is not as good as Patrick.
I'm going to say favorite active thing, right? Because it's going to be tough to beat BioForge.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The back catalog is untouchable at the moment. Persona 4 Endurance Run is probably my favorite thing ever. The BioForge thing is fantastic. But no, yeah, Breaking Brad. Really cool. What are you saying, Shimboy?
Is the Breaking Brad stuff premium?
Yes, premium.
Okay. Just so people know.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you need to subscribe. It's for a low, low fee of like a couple dollars a month or like $50 a year.
No,
I bumped that though.
It's $5 a month, which would be $60 a year if you did that method, yeah. Or you go for, yeah, 50 a month, or 50 a year.
50 a month, Jesus.
50 a month, yeah, I'm not sure if that's worth it.
Yeah, I would be like, I don't know about that. That's,
The nice thing about the yearly payment thing is you also get a coupon for,
$15 store. Towards the store. All right, yeah. Is that everyone's plugs? Is that everyone, all everyone's, yeah, got to say?
Damn done.
As the host of this episode, apparently, of the Scotchcast, I bid you adieu. No, you're not including that. I'm cutting you off, even though you're doing the editing.
I don't know. Cynic might do the editing, so.
This chick is durable.
Oh, and I should send Cynic the clip that I sent you.
Wait, that chick?
I'm just watching Bumblebee's. I'm not saying she's hot or anything. She's just adorable in this song.
Oh, I God. Gee, I thought you said durable.
Durable?
Yeah.
It's like, is she getting beat up or something?
It's like that video we were watching on Mumble before, where two girls had this bright idea that they wanted to get black eyes because they had never been punched in the face before. So they started punching each other in the face.
Wow. Man. I need to see that video.
It was pretty hot. I'll try and find it on my YouTube history.
I'm glad I'm still recording.
Can you stealth put that in the show notes?
It's like, also, like, the plug is just don't watch this link.
Yeah, don't watch this. Don't watch this.
It'll just be like bracket hyperlink close bracket. That'll be the link.
Yeah, that's it. That's at the end. If someone out there may see it, I don't know.